No one in Cabinet is delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 1025. The game streaming live on Twitter, Twitch, Facebook Live, and YouTube. Thanks to the law offices of Amanda Gentry, Fireball Hot Take Friday, live from the Hillside Medical Game Studios. And of course, even though it's a little bit earlier than normal, it is a Friday, which means Chad Withrow joins us, Outkick 360 on the program. So, Chad, we were talking today about the AFC playoffs and what it means for the Titans, because it hasn't been since 2008 the Titan fans can watch Wild Card Weekend and say, okay, I want this team to win, or I want that team to win because I'd rather play that quarterback, or I'd rather get this team. And so I, as somebody who usually wants people to have a take and stand by it, and it's Fireball Hot Take Friday, I have decided that I think everybody's opinions can change based upon what they see this week, who they want to play, who they think would be the best matchup. And I use Cincinnati as an example. I think Cincinnati's got an explosive offense, but if I watch them for a full game against the Raiders and I don't think they can stop anybody, and I don't think they could stop Derrick Henry if that's the case, then maybe I'll say I'd rather the Titans play the Bengals this week. I think Buffalo, you know, if they go out and dominate New England, I might root for Kansas City next week to beat them. I think this week you are allowed to kind of change your opinions because it's only one game. How do you feel about the AFC playoffs and how uncertain it feels like things are going to be this weekend?
Well, I think your opinion changed, right, Jared? You switched on the Patriots because of their performance against the Dolphins, and maybe not as fearful of the Patriots to match up with the Titans. I mean, I agree with you. I think, obviously, injuries would be a big thing in terms of what you see this weekend with who you want to pit against the Titans and what the best matchup would be. Right now, I'm going into it thinking Cincinnati is the team I least want to see in that game. And it's the offense. It's a really good quarterback in Joe Burrow. It's Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. It's Joe Mixon. And it's also the fact that they're third in the league against the run. And the Titans want to run the football, whether that be with Derrick Henry or Deontay Foreman. So if I had to pick right now, I would say the Bengals are the team that I least want the Titans to play from a matchup perspective. But that could change based on what we see this weekend, injuries that may take place. But right now, it's Cincinnati.
What do you make of kind of the way the AFC playoffs are? New England's got the best coach, or at least we think that New England's got the best coach. Buffalo might have the best all-around team, a high-end defense ranking, high-end offensive ranking. Kansas City obviously has Patrick Mahomes, but you wouldn't have to worry about Kansas City or Buffalo if you're the Titans. And Pittsburgh, you know, upsets happen in the NFL playoffs. It doesn't seem very likely. The Raiders are red hot. What do you make of the AFC field?
To me, it's Kansas City's conference. I mean, look, I'm big on, you know, it's not what we think or what you think or what anyone thinks will happen in a matchup. It's what has been done before. And Kansas City's the two-time defending champion. They were terrible at one point this year. We saw a bad Kansas City team here in Nashville against the Titans. And since then, they've figured things out. They've been better on defense. Mahomes has been better. I mean, if I'm handicapping this thing going into the playoffs, I'm saying Kansas City's the clear favorite going into this tournament, and prove me wrong. You know, until otherwise, they're the team to beat. The Bills roster looks scary. Bills in the playoffs don't scare me right now. Mm-hmm. Titans have the best route to get to the Super Bowl. If Derrick Henry is, in fact, close to 100% and playing in this game, they've got a great shot at getting to the Super Bowl. But if you ask me to pick right now, this is Kansas City's conference until proven otherwise, and they've earned that designation by winning the AFC the last 2 years.
Okay, then I'll ask you this. Who should be the favorite, based upon what you just said, who should be the favorite in the NFC?
It's Green Bay.
Over Tampa Bay.
Yeah, look, I think – I'll say this. I think that Green Bay, as a home field advantage and having the number one seed, means a lot. And – yes, I'm going against what I said on Kansas City on this, but Tampa Bay, they did it once last year. They haven't done it two times in a row, and that game was lost by Matt LaFleur and not Aaron Rodgers and not Lambeau Field. So I view that championship game a little bit differently. I would say Green Bay is the favorite, but I'll also say this. I think, you know, there are some people maybe sleeping on Tampa Bay because of the injuries at receiver. But yeah, I mean, it's a coin toss between those two, but I give a slight favorite to Green Bay.
Chad Withrow is our guest, Outkick 360, presented by Apple Collision Centers, online at applecollisioncenters.com. So I started the show off today. I think 51% chance the Titans are making the Super Bowl. 51% chance in my heart. So it's not like I'm using any data or any – I'm just saying I think it is more likely than not that the Titans are going to make the Super Bowl. Now, you've said that it's Kansas City's conference. So what percent chance would you put it at for the Titans to make the Super Bowl?
I don't know about a percentage chance. It's funny that you bring that up. Jonathan Hutton, my co-host on Outkick 360, was saying that this first game for the Titans is the most important, you know, given their history in the divisional round. But that once you get in that playoff setting, especially when we talk about rest versus rust, and you have the week off, it's great to get that week off. You absolutely want it. But sometimes there is a rust factor when teams are playing for their lives the week before, and you're getting one of those teams that already survived a win and continue playing scenario, and you're the one hosting a team coming in. We've seen it before with the Titans. I agree with them that this first game is the biggest for the Titans for getting to the Super Bowl. It's almost a little bit more nerve-wracking that first one than them hosting an AFC championship game. I mean, look, because of what I said about Kansas City and the fact I still think they're the favorite, I'll put the percentage at 40% that the Titans go to the Super Bowl at this point. But I say that knowing they have the best route because they got the number one seed. And I look at who they're going to possibly be playing. And I said Cincinnati's a team I would least want the Titans to play. But also look at it and say, no one scares me. There's not a team that's just a devastatingly bad matchup for the Titans in the divisional round. I don't look at the Raiders, Cincinnati, any of the possible teams they're going to play, New England, and think that, you know, this is a horrible matchup for the Titans. So from that perspective, I think they're in really good shape.
Yesterday, I lost my marbles when we talked about analytics. The DVOA rankings have the Titans as the worst number one seed of all time. And I think in a lot of times you could see that probably in local radio. Somebody will, you know, oh, well, the numbers say that the local team's no good and the numbers are terrible and but I think I've probably built up enough faith that it's not like a local homer going after the anti-team take. Maybe that would be something that maybe your station, your old station, excuse me, would probably do, but that's not something we would probably do around here. But I look at the analytics and everything else, and they say the Titans aren't good or this or whatever. There's something out there, and I don't know what it is. And you brought up the history of being the one seed, and you know, Chris Anders will be part of our playoff preview show tonight. He was a part of that 2000 team, a big part of that 2000 team that lost to the Ravens at home. I just think part of it is Mike Vrabel this season, and I don't know what it is because it's not like Vrabel loves me, but I think there's something about him and either the way that he's starting to manage the game now or the way he's starting to manage the team now, but there's something about the New England background and the way Vrabel's grown as a coach that almost gives me a little bit of comfort going into these playoffs that maybe I haven't had a lot in the past.
Jared, I'm never afraid to go after someone in media or someone who I disagree with on social media when I see it. But there is a fatigue factor when I see many members of social media going after the same people in a town and just, you know, hey, let's all get together and win one for the old team. And let's all band together against these big, bad bullies who love math and are analytics experts. The moment I see someone other than me going after someone, I back down because then I don't want to be lumped into that group that just goes after someone on behalf of a fan base because you feel like, you know, you're going to virtue signal your own fan base and show how brave you are, and they're going to like you more. That's the activities of someone who just really wants to be liked by a fan base more than anything else than sharing their honest opinion. So, yes, that does annoy me. The analytics stuff, I mean, the more you see these things, it's just more arguments for Mike Vrabel as NFL Coach of the Year. Like every time that you say, this is the worst number one seed, you know, someone once said, this is a boring team. They get, you know, two all pros and other teams. It's all a sign that Mike Vrabel has done an amazing job with this group. Whatever you want to argue, they are the number one seed. They've won close games. They have a solid identity. If you say the Tennessee Titans, anyone who follows football knows exactly what they want to do every single game. And for that reason, I give tons of credit to Mike Vrabel and what he's done. I don't care what the analytics say. Because the Bills blew out a few teams and that inflates their analytics and their point differential and everything else, should we think that the Bills are the better football team than the Titans? No, the Titans are the number one seed. So in my mind, the Titans are better than the Buffalo Bills. They beat the Bills this year. Very close game. The Bills are good. But I just don't get caught up in – I feel like analytics have become – either the crutch that a fan base will use to defend someone if the analytics side with that team or that player. And then it becomes the sword they'll use against someone who points out analytics not favoring your team when they don't like what they're hearing with the numbers.
And the thing about Vrabel with Coach of the Year, Chad, is Coach of the Year, and I agree with you. I mean, I think Vrabel's going to win it. I think that, you know, Zach Taylor has a case. I think Bisaccia in Oakland or in Vegas, I think he's got a serious case for Coach of the Year. And apparently Adam Schefter said on Sirius XM, he said that Bisaccia has no chance of getting that job, which is crazy to me. But, like, Coach of the Year is almost an award of, hey, who outkicked their coverage this year in terms of winning more games or doing more than was expected given the circumstances. But in a one-game playoff where game planning is important but also reacting during the game is important, I'm not sure I trust Zach Taylor. And Bisaccia, I don't think there's enough information there to know what he's capable of doing as a coach. I think with Vrabel, he's got the playoff experience. He's got good playoff experience. He's got bad playoff experience. But this season, I don't feel like he ever did something in the feel of a game that cost the Titans the game. Whereas, you know, early on in his career, he was always wanting to go for it on fourth down, or they went for a two-point conversion against the Chargers, and I thought that cost him a game. And this, I almost feel like you look back at this season, and there's a lot of moments where you think, man, Vrabel made the right call in that instance, and that gives me a little bit of comfort. The playoff history, him beating Belichick in the playoffs, beating that Ravens team, gives me like a little bit of confidence in him going into the playoffs. Is that local, our coach is the guy, homerism, or is that the reality that maybe the Titans do have the check mark in the coach department for a lot of these games?
I think it's a check mark in the coach column and not homerism. And I think I would point to his record when he gets extra rest for his team and how good he's been in those scenarios. And correct me if I'm wrong, the last big question mark I can think of with Vrabel in terms of game management or decisions came a year ago in the playoffs against the Ravens when he punted.
Yep.
At one point, I don't remember the exact circumstance, but I do
Fourth and two early in the fourth, yep. Like 10 minutes to go in the fourth, yep, quarter. I think they were down by four and he decided to punt it down
from the 40-yard line, I think. Yeah. Yep. That's the last time I can really remember the fan base, you know, outwardly questioning something with Mike Vrabel. Yeah. I mean, I would, again, I think he's the coach of the year. I think it's always fascinating what you said about coach of the year in every league turns into a competition between the overachiever versus the dominant one. That's always a discussion, right? The team who was the best in the league or that had a great season, but maybe you expected that great season out of them, but still they delivered on it versus the upstart coach or someone who overcame the odds. I think Vrabel falls in the overcame the odds category because people were expecting the Titans to be a playoff team and to be very good this year. But they didn't expect to have this many guys on the roster, to lose A.J. Brown for a stretch, to have Julio Jones for half the year. And, oh, by the way, the best player on their team, Derrick Henry, was gone for half the year, and they're still the number one seed. For that reason, I think he's the coach of the year. And I'm with you. I can't really point at a lot of huge question marks from, you know, clock management, game decisions, anything with Mike Vrabel this year. I think he's done a very good job.
What do you think the optimism level for Titan fans should be? I'm cautiously optimistic. I think there are some Titan fans, maybe the loudest Titan fans, who are just through the roof, our team is the best. But I think for the most part, Titan fans are always going to be a little skeptical.
Oh, I think Titans fans, I mean, if they're being honest with themselves, they're terrified. Because badly, you want to see history made, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think about this following Tennessee basketball. If they get back into an Elite Eight or they get to a Sweet 16, you start to get nervous because you so badly want them to go to their first ever Final Four. You want to see history. Tennessee is probably the best college basketball program that's never been to a Final Four. You know, they're one of the biggest successes in the SEC, probably second or third in wins all time, never been to a Final Four. The city of Nashville has never hosted an AFC championship game. They've had opportunities, and they haven't done it. So I think Titans fans get more and more nervous the closer they get to that.
Chad Withrow with us, Outkick 360. I have a Titans question about the coaching carousel that seems to be going on, plus strange comments in Indianapolis. We'll get Chad's thoughts on that. Plus, Chad has a take on Joe Rex Rhodes' take that he wants to get out there, so that's all coming up. It's a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Stillman & Company, Chad Withrow with us, Outkick 360. Stillman and Company rolling along on a Fireball Hot Take Friday. Chad Withrow with us, Outkick 360, presented by Apple Collision Centers, online at applecollisioncenters.com. So I'm looking at this coaching hiring cycle, firing cycle, you name it, guys getting dumped after 2 years. David Culley, there were two that stood out to me. And I'm going to start with David Culley in Houston, because everybody's sitting there. I thought Culley did a good job given the circumstances that he was put in because of the Deshaun Watson situation. And the owner seems like he's kind of kooky, and he's in love with the team chaplain, and they want to be a Patriots organization, but Deshaun didn't want to be a Patriots organization, so they brought fire after 1 year and whatever. But I think everybody, and I haven't heard anybody talk about this, when they get mad about Brian Flores being fired because of a power struggle in Miami or whatever, and that is, sometimes I think the Titans might be the blueprint, Chad, for what some of these organizations are trying to do, New England specifically. But the Titans, you easily could have kept Mike Mularkey after 18 wins in two seasons and a playoff win when this team was the worst team in the NFL when he got the job. And I was reluctant to fire him because I'm like, look, I've seen Jeff Fisher's the end of his tenure, Mike Munchak's tenure, Ken Whisenhunt's tenure. You can do a lot worse than Mike Mularkey. But they wanted to have that synergy with the GM and the coach, and it's obviously worked for Vrabel. And I think other teams are looking at that saying, well, if I don't want my coach, I'll just move on no matter what I felt like he did in that first year. Do you think the Titans are kind of the energy for some of these teams that are making changes that are at least a little bit head-scratching?
Well, I refuse to try to apply logic to whatever the Houston Texans decide to do, because they've been completely moronic time and time again. I can't make sense of a lot of the things they've done. I don't understand hiring David Culley if you never intended to give him a shot. I don't know why you want a one-year bridge to hire someone else. I don't think David Culley did a great job. I don't think he did an awful job either. He was handed an unwinnable situation with the Texans. Now, if you feel like you can go make an immediate upgrade, then go and do it. The one thing I will say, that if the Texans go with Jerod Mayo, if that's the choice, that certainly feels like you were trying to replicate what the Titans have done. They are hiring an 11-year playing vet for the New England Patriots that played linebacker for Bill Belichick, and he's only coached for 3 years. I know Vrabel had more coaching experience at different places. He was at Ohio State. He was with the Houston Texans when the Titans hired him. But that feels like a move to try to replicate the Titans' success with Mike Vrabel, if, in fact, they do that. But that's the one thing that I'll look at with the Texans and honestly say, oh, I see what they're doing here. Because everything else that they do, I do not understand what they're trying to accomplish. So until they start making decisions and doing things like hiring Jerod Mayo, that's a clear sign they're trying to replicate the Titans. I really can't assign anything logical or predict anything they're going to do, because I don't know that they even know what they're doing at times.
So this is my theory on it, and you could tell me if I'm – this is all speculative, but – Deshaun Watson, people forget that before all the rape allegations came out against Deshaun Watson, that the Texans desperately wanted him to get on board with what they were trying to do for obvious reasons. But he said when they hired Nick Caserio that he was done. And it was like, they told me that I'd have a say in the organization, and he clearly didn't want a Patriot guy. And they brought in a Patriot guy after they fired Patriot people, and Deshaun said he was done. And so then Caserio couldn't hire whatever Patriot coach he wanted to hire because they were trying to appease Deshaun. Then they hired David Culley. You know, hey, he's not a Patriot guy. He's a Ravens guy. And, you know, maybe you'll like him, Deshaun. And then the allegations came, and it was like, well, now I guess it doesn't matter. And Deshaun says he won't play for David Culley anyways. So now we can get rid of him and get a Patriot guy, because there's not any one person that we have to appease here. That's my theory on why the David Culley situation happened the way it happened.
Yeah, I think there's probably some truth to that. You know, there was a time where they were trying to appease Deshaun Watson. Obviously, that went south with all the allegations. And then they were just in no man's land throughout the season. And again, look, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, cry tears over David Culley, who's going to get paid a lot of money to be a one-year head coach. And then he can go do, you know, whatever else he wants now. But I just think the whole situation is odd, because I watched the Texans obviously against the Titans, and I saw a team that had nothing to play for except getting to the golf course at the end of their season, that played hard. whether that be for David Coley themselves, just because they're being good professionals, I don't know. But I saw teams like the Giants and others that, you know, weren't really doing a lot late in the season. So I do give them some credit for seemingly improving late in the year.
What do you make of the mess in Indianapolis?
Well, I mean, I watched Hard Knocks, and I don't know how, if you're a Colts fan, you can be encouraged by your head coach, by your quarterback, by either of your defensive leaders, DeForest Buckner especially, just watching. Granted, I didn't watch the whole series. I watched the final episode. So we obviously know how it's going to end. We know the end of the story going into it. So maybe I'm reading into some of it. But Frank Reich standing up there, not emotionally mad, nothing. It didn't seem irritated, bothered by the fact they lost, and saying, hey, we have the right people. We're going to be fine because we have the right people in this room and we have the right people on this team. I was very uninspired by Frank Reich, by Carson Wentz and his response to that game. And it's not a good situation for Indy right now, because they clearly blew it with the Carson Wentz move. And Chris Ballard isn't going to fully admit that, but they're in a tough spot with that one. They don't have draft picks coming up. It's rough times in Indy.
So the thing that I took away from that Reich speech that you're talking about on Hard Knocks, we played it yesterday. Caroline hadn't heard it. Like, she hadn't seen Hard Knocks, hadn't heard it until we played on the air. And she literally just turned to me and said, like, what a goober. And we were just talking about how I heard that and I thought Dan Quinn. You know, like, I thought, like, your traditional loser coach. And everybody has hyped up Frank Reich about how great Frank Reich is. And outside of winning a playoff game with Andrew Luck, he hasn't done anything in Indianapolis. And I'm not sitting here saying that, you know, that you should expect Frank Reich to win big, which Jacoby said, or to win with old man Phillip Rivers. But at some point, you only get so many cracks at trying different quarterbacks out. And I felt like the response, and the thing that got me, was we built a championship culture this year. I'm like, dude, you just lost to Jacksonville. I think a lot of the blame belongs to Wentz, because I never thought he was that good. But I think Reich is getting a free pass here from the people in Indianapolis, which I'm fine with. But I think it's ridiculous. If the guy campaigned to get Carson Wentz here, you got Carson Wentz here, you lost to Jacksonville, now you're getting up in front of my team and you're saying we have a championship culture. You think Belichick or Vrabel would have done that? I look at Reich and I'm like, I don't know if this guy can win in the NFL.
Well, Caroline may need to put earmuffs on here, because I know she's a big fashionista. But I was, and I may be an old man for saying this, I was turned off the moment they went to the Quiddy Pay fashion show. And he was talking about spending $12,000 on a pair of tennis shoes. And his coach was joking with him, hey, next time you get the urge to spend $12,000 on shoes, tell me and I'll make some for you. I'll have some handmade shoes for you and you can give me that money. And I remember Dan Dockich, who comes on our show weekly, who's with Outkick now, he's up in Indianapolis. And I remember him this week going into that episode talking about, you know, Quiddy Pay versus Denico Autry. And you watch Denico Autry at the Titans. They said, we want Quiddy Pay. We don't want Denico Autry. And Quiddy Pay is not doing enough. Then I watched Quiddy Pay put on this Project Runway fashion show where he's talking about how damn concerned he is with his game day fit, and that he's, you know, spends a lot of time thinking about his game day fit, because when you look good, you play good. Now, give me a break. And again, I may sound like a really old guy here, but I don't want my defensive linemen or guys charged with getting after the quarterback concerned with their game day fit. If you want to look nice, fine. Hire a designer, hire a stylist, someone who just gives you your suits, your clothes, whatever. You should not be spending that much time worrying about your game day fit. I was thrown off when that went on. Then the Frank Reich comments made me mad. Carson Wentz facial expressions made me mad. If I am a Colts fan, I am super pissed watching that episode, and especially after watching that performance against Jacksonville.
It's funny you brought up the Quiddy Pay thing. I thought the $12,000 shoes were ridiculous, but I didn't really think much of it other than, oh, this is just fluff they're putting in the, you know, the Hard Knocks where it can't be an unmitigated disaster for an hour. But I will say this, Derrick Henry always wearing Derrick Henry's always wearing some kind of fashion statement suit for a big game on the plane or whatever. You ever hear Derrick Henry talk about it? I mean, it's like, to your point, I bet you Derrick at the beginning of the year probably gets fitted. They probably send him suits. And Derek puts them on, and everybody's like, wow, Derek, that's funny. You look like a leprechaun today, you know, whatever. And then Derek just kind of goes on the plane, and then Derek plays. But it's not like we're sitting there hearing Derek Henry tell stories at the podium. Yeah, I spent $27,000 on a pair of shoes. And I think you're right. Like, what has Quiddy Pay done? Derek Henry's won two rushing titles. What's Quiddy Pay done to sit there and have all this discussion about his shoes? And it's like, dude, you just lost to Jacksonville.
Like, well, I also – there's a distinction to me. But first off, Derek Henry can wear whatever he wants. I'm not going to worry about it because he's earned the right, and he can do that. Also, I have a distinction between people who touch the football and throw or carry the football versus someone with their hand in dirt. I don't want my guys with their hand in the dirt worried about game day fit. Maybe I'm old school that way. But if I was his position coach, I would watch that episode and think, hey, let's not worry about those $12,000 shoes and your latest designer. And you know, let's go beat Jacksonville next year. Let's focus on that.
Chad Withrow with us, Outkick 360. So Joe Rexroad came on the show, and he, I don't want to say like staunchly defended Jerry Stackhouse, because I'm not sure there is much of a defense for Jerry Stackhouse at Vanderbilt other than, hey, I think there's a chance. But Joe certainly fired that at me on Wednesday. You were listening. So you've got thoughts on Jerry Stackhouse and Joe Rexroad's unwavering belief in Jerry Stackhouse. What are your thoughts?
I think Joe's a very good writer. I do not understand how after Jerry Stackhouse reacted the way he did to Joe's piece about him, that I thought was, like you, a borderline fluff piece about Jerry Stackhouse, where he correctly quoted him that people that don't think he can coach voted for Donald Trump, and that's the reason people don't like him. And then Stackhouse got mad at him about it. I mean, it's like Stockholm Syndrome with Joe on this guy. Like, how would you possibly defend him? And I'm not talking just personally. Like, I would be done defending him personally at that point, but look at his resume. What has he done other than wore nice suits on the sideline? You brought it up, Jared. I thought this was one of your better rants I've heard from you. He's won 19% of his games in the SEC. And people want to point to the one season where Bryce Drew lost his star player and they didn't win an SEC game. Fine, that was terrible. It got him fired. Add that in, and you said the stat. He still won a much higher percentage of the game, even when you have the win season. Jerry Stackhouse has done nothing. And not only has he done nothing, he has not endeared himself to a single person, I guess, except Joe Rexroad, who continues to defend him. I mean, what has he done? What interviews is he doing? Other than blocking people, I don't think I've ever even tweeted about the guy and I'm blocked from Jerry Stackhouse right now. It is a very, very odd situation. Jerry Stackhouse may be able to go back to the G League and have some success. The guy came into the SEC thinking he had all the answers. He's got none right now. And barring some miraculous run to the NCAA tournament and winning a game in the tournament for this team, I don't know how you keep Jerry Stackhouse after the season. I'm not for firing him in season. They've got a good enough team, and they have improved talent-wise to the level where I think they're more athletic and they're going to beat some teams in the SEC just like they beat Arkansas on the road. But, I mean, this has been a complete disaster, what we've seen from Jerry Stackhouse. I don't get any defense of Stackhouse at this point.
I just don't feel this. And I have no feelings towards Stackhouse personally one way or another. I met him at the Coaches versus Cancer thing. He seems like a fine guy. But the blocking people on Twitter and the Joe Rexroad, Donald Trump thing, like that was like – it didn't make a lot of sense to me. Well, the way he butchered the end of the game Saturday, where he used two timeouts and didn't get a shot off, and the fact that I don't feel like they make any effort to promote Vanderbilt basketball inside the city of Nashville. Maybe I'm wrong. All I know is we've got Belmont that's blowing us up all the time and blowing up everybody. Hey, you want to talk to Casey? You want to talk Belmont? And I appreciate Belmont's hustle because they understand in a pro sports town, you know, how do you get more people to know Belmont, to know Casey, to come to their games? And they try. I don't feel that at all from Jerry Stackhouse. So you're not trying to get people to care. You're not doing a good job coaching, winning or losing. And you're kind of doing things off, you know, the trail that are kind of crazy. What am I supposed to like about you?
Well, and Greg Sage of Belmont does a great job. You're right. And they're always out there busting it, selling their program. And they've got a good program. They got a great product to sell.
Absolutely.
Jerry Stackhouse, his defense, does not have a good product to sell right now. So that may be part of it. I don't know why you wouldn't be selling it initially when you take that job. And now the sales pitch is, well, he's got a good recruiting class coming in. Well, great. You're losing Scottie Pippen. who right now is your team. I mean, he's going to be gone. He's not going to be here next year. I just look around and think, if that is what you're hanging your hat on, is this recruiting class coming in next year for Vanderbilt, what you're really doing is saying, we don't want to fire a basketball coach and pay him a ton of money in a buyout. We want to keep the status quo and just pray for the best next season, that some sort of turnaround happens, even though it's probably not.
Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, presented by Apple Collision Centers. Last thing for you. Any big upsets this weekend in the playoffs?
Oh, it's definitely not going to be Pittsburgh. I believe it's definitely not going to be Philadelphia over Tampa. I mean, I guess New England over Buffalo. We saw it happen once, but the conditions aren't going to be the same. I really don't think so, Jared. I think we kind of have a chalky weekend with big upsets. So that's going to set up a great divisional round.
Chad Withrow, as always. Chad, appreciate you. We'll talk next week.
All right. See you guys. See you, Caroline.
Chad Withrow, Outkick 360, joining us on the program. Speaking of those games, I got to rank them in terms of interest level, because I will disagree. I think there's one out there that I'm all about. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, Fireball Hot Take Friday. It's ESPN 102.5 again. Stillman & Company, hey, tomorrow, big matinee Preds game, so be sure to get excited about that. Join 102.5 The Game for the Bud Light Preds Watch Party at Headquarters Beer K. Drink specials. Enter to win Preds tickets. Watch the Preds take on the Boston Bruins. Preds Bud Light Watch Party at Headquarters Beer K, located at 114 2nd Avenue South downtown. The puck drops tomorrow at noon. So we got six Super Wild Card Weekend games. And I'm going to rank them 1 through 6 before six-pack picks today. And this is just how I see them as the most interesting. So you may think they're different, but this is what I see. And we'll start with, should we start with the least interesting or should we start with the most interesting?
Least interesting.
Okay, so that means 6. So if we could dial up number 6.
Number 6.
The least interesting game, the Eagles and the Buccaneers. And I know it's Tom Brady, and I love Tom Brady, but Tom Brady is not going to lose to Jalen Hurts and Nick Sirianni at home in the playoffs. Bruce Arians might, Tampa might, but Tom Brady would never. So that game, total blowout. Maybe it'll be like 10 points or something like last year, the Saints and the Bears. But no, this game, not interesting. Brady will win.
Number 5.
Kansas City, Pittsburgh. Kansas City's supposed to be really good. Pittsburgh is not very good. So unless Tomlin motivates up a miracle, Ben has, you know, divine intervention, or Kansas City just poops their pants like they did when the Titans played there in 2017 with Mike Mularkey and beat them, I don't see that being much of a game.
Number 4.
Rams in Arizona on Monday night. Am I the only person that's not interested in watching this game?
I think so. I'm interested.
Are you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I think you could go either way. I really do think that's a total pick'em.
We had them on Monday Night Football already this year, and I thought the game was so boring.
Yeah, but it's the Rams and the Cardinals on West Coast teams. The NFL loves West Coast teams.
Well, the NFL loves the Rams. But they obviously don't love it if they're making it the Monday night game and not one of the premier viewing window games.
But is Monday night not one of the premier viewing window games?
Well, it's not bigger than 3:30 Sunday.
Correct.
It's not bigger than Sunday night.
Correct.
And I don't think it's bigger than Saturday night.
I don't know.
Oh, Saturday night? I think Saturday night's bigger TV window for a playoff game.
Maybe
than Monday
so.
Night. But
maybe so.
I'm not interested in this game. I'll watch it, like we'll all watch it, but I just, you know. You guys knock yourself out with those, with the Rams in Arizona. I'm so tired of Stafford. He's just boring. Next game.
Number 3.
New England, Buffalo. I think Buffalo's got the better team. I think it's a rivalry game. I think it's a big prove-it game for Buffalo. I think it's a big game for Belichick, you know, to go out there and see if he can whip up the Bills after the Bills whipped him up a couple weeks ago. I think this is going to be a fun game. Weather's always a factor, but those are fun. The Tuck Rule game was fun because of the weather. So I'm actually very interested in New England, Buffalo.
Number 2.
Cincinnati and the Raiders. This is a game. And I don't know if it's because the Titans, it's a big game for them, or what? I don't know. But I find this to be a very interesting game. Like, is Cincinnati for real? They get a home playoff game. Joe Burrow, Zach Taylor. We saw them beat the Chiefs, but that's like the first time this year we paid attention to Cincinnati. So the Raiders have won 4 in a row or whatever it is. They're red hot. Their coach is trying to make a case to stay the coach. I think this is a nice game. Two interesting quarterbacks, non-traditional. Like, it's not a rivalry. So it's kind of like, okay, like, these two teams are going to have to feel each other out. I like this for a playoff game. I think it's the second most interesting game.
Number one.
The Cowboys. And it's only because, like, there's a certain percentage of America that thinks the Cowboys can do no wrong. And there's a certain percentage of America that thinks the Cowboys are perpetually overrated. And count me in the second part. And San Francisco, you know, they were in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, but, like, this could be Jimmy's last game. And, you know, could Jimmy make a last stand to keep his job or to audition for other teams? And Mike McCarthy and Dak slumped and Zeke. And I find that to be a very, very interesting game. I expect the TV rating for Cowboys 49ers to be
through the roof.
Absolutely. Tony Romo, Jim Nantz will be doing the game. Mm-hmm. It'll be on Nickelodeon, too. I think it's going to be wild for that. So let's pick these games. Let's do that next. Six-Pack Picks is coming up here on Stillman & Company. Fireball, Hot Take Friday. I love Fireball. Cinnamon whiskey goes down so smooth and tastes so great. It's playoff time, which means it's time to kick back and enjoy ice-cold Fireball cinnamon whiskey. Your team's in. And when your team's in and you know you're going to be snowed in watching football, you got to have Fireball. That's right. Fireball cinnamon whiskey. Ignite the night. Please do it responsibly. And be 21 years or older to enjoy. That's Fireball cinnamon whiskey. Stillman & Company, the playoff preview show coming up in 10 minutes. Chris Sanders and TD, we are locking and locked and loaded for 2 hours of Titans playoff previews. But it is a Friday, so it's time for six-pack picks presented by Pella Windows and Doors of Nashville. Chase is in for Ian today, so the PD running the show. So, Chase, we know that I thrashed Caroline in the regular season. There's no surprise there.
I don't think you thrashed necessarily.
I think I beat you by 20 games.
We don't know that.
We will know. But the playoffs are anew. Where do we start, Chase?
Well, we're going to start with that. As I'm learning on the fly here there, Jared, so I apologize if the music is wrong. But let's just start with the Raiders at the Bengals. The Bengals, -5.5.
I'll go first. I will take the Raiders. I think the Raiders are going to win. Again, the record 10-4 over the last 3 years for the road team in the wild card weekend, which means the road teams have to win some games. This is one a road team can win. I think the Raiders are going to win. I think Joe's knee is more of a concern than the Bengals are letting on. I'll take the Raiders.
I'm going to take the Bengals. I mean, I know both teams have been incredibly hot, but I think that the Bengals have more talent on that team, and I think they've gotten a taste of kind of being that elite team, beating the Kansas City Chiefs. They're on a high, and I think they want to continue that. So I'm going to take the Bengals -5.5.
So, okay. Then we got the Patriots and the Bills tomorrow night on CBS. You were just talking about that. Bills, the home team, -4.5.
I have a good feeling that this is going to be kind of a recreation of that first Patriots-Bills game, the windy game, the cold game, and the Patriots ended up winning that one. But I'm going to take the Bills because I think the Bills learned their lesson from that first game, and they're going to be able to get the running game going a little bit more, not necessarily trust Josh Allen with the ball in his hands in such a cold game.
So I think Belichick's a great coach, but I just don't think that Mac Jones can do what's going to be required of him to beat the number one defense. And it reminds me of all the times that Floyd used to talk about rookie quarterbacks. And he'd be like, yeah, you can't win with a rookie quarterback. He's like, but wait a minute, what about, no, can't win with a rookie quarterback. But what about, no, can't win with a rookie quarterback. I think Floyd knows, you know, that you really can't win with a rookie quarterback. I think Bill knows that too. I think Bill's probably just happy to be in the playoffs mm-hmm. with Mac Jones. I think Buffalo wins.
All right, moving right along to Sunday, we have Philadelphia and the Bucks. Of course, that will be on Fox. What do we think there as we have the Eagles getting 8.5, so +8.5.
I will take Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay wins. I think this game's a blowout. I think the Eagles are probably just happy to be there too. Jalen Hurts probably happy to be there, and they're happy that Carson Wentz isn't there. But I think Tampa Bay's the second-best team in the NFC. Give me the Bucs.
Yeah, I think this is an obvious one. Give me the Bucs. Give me Tom Brady. Knows what he's doing in the playoffs. Knows that he needs to get a win here, and I think it's a better team. Even Tom Brady without Antonio Brown and some of his top receivers, give me Tom Brady and the Bucs.
And then one that I am looking forward to, you seem to think this is pretty interesting, Jared. The Cowboys in Jerry's World, -3 against the 49ers.
I mean, that's basically an even spread with the 3 points going to the Cowboys.
I'm actually going to take the 49ers plus +3. I mean, everyone is so incredibly high in the Cowboys this season, but I think Dak is in a little bit of a slump. This entire offense is in a little bit of a slump. I think that Cowboys have been trending downward, and I think the 49ers have been trending upward over the past couple of weeks. So I'm going to take the 49ers to cover.
I'm taking Dallas to cover and to win, obviously.
Yeah.
I just think Jimmy G stinks. We watched the game here. We saw how bad Jimmy was. The Titans, the MVP of the game was Jimmy Garoppolo for the Titans. And the 49ers have been done with Jimmy for a year. And their defense isn't that dominant. And they've
Has Dak done anything too special this season?
He's been okay. But Trayvon Diggs, they tell me that he's been great. He's got to keep Deebo Samuel from running away with the game because that's the one way San Francisco wins. I think Dallas takes care of business, and the Cowboy fans will be insufferable next week, and it'll set up for Cowboys-Packers, and oh my God, ESPN and Fox will talk about Cowboys-Packers literally 24 hours a day, but I'll take the Cowboys.
All right, Sunday night, Pittsburgh, plus 12.5 on the road at Arrowhead in Kansas City.
12.5 is a ridiculous spread for an NFL game. Give me Pittsburgh plus 12.5. Andy Reid is known for pants pooping during the playoffs. I know that we forget about it because he's been really good with Mahomes. But this Kansas City team is not last year's Kansas City team. They are not the Kansas City team the year before that. Pittsburgh's got nothing to lose in this game. I think it'll be like the Denver game where they'll win, but they won't look good doing it. I'll take the Steelers plus 12.5.
I mean, there is so much meat on that bone, Steelers plus 12.5, and it sounds crazy, but I'm actually going to take Kansas City minus 12.5. I mean, Big Ben doesn't even think that they belong in the playoffs, especially hanging with the second seed in the AFC, the team that a lot of people think are actually going to run away with the AFC. I don't know if I necessarily believe that fully, but I'm going to take Kansas City minus 12.5 because I just don't think the Steelers are a good team at all.
For the first time ever, Wild Card Monday, the Arizona Cardinals and the Los Angeles Rams. Rams at home, minus -4.
I'm going to take the Rams. I'm going to take the Rams. I just don't think Kyler Murray has looked like the same quarterback. This team hasn't looked like the same team that they did earlier in the season. I give me Matthew Stafford over Kyler Murray.
I'll take Arizona. I think Arizona's defense will find a way. I think Arizona won the game later in the year. And I just am not a big believer in McVay. I think he's very overrated. I think this will be, and people will say, wait a minute, they trade all his first-round picks. They got knocked out first round of the playoffs. And that will happen. Give me Arizona. Six-pack picks presented by Pella Windows and Doors. And let me tell everybody right now, the playoff preview show, Chris Sanders, Teron Davenport, they are here. That is next. But first, be caller 5 right now at 615-737-1025, and you'll win a pair of tickets before you can buy them to see the Eagles perform their iconic Hotel California album in its entirety at Bridgestone Arena on April 28th. 615-737-1025, and apparently tickets are on sale now. So good luck on the Eagles tickets. Playoff preview show coming up next. It's ESPN 1025 The Game.